Welcome to One Planet, One Place Radio Show. The show for the human spirit. Brought to you in conjunction with the Evolutionary Business Council. Now, please welcome your host, author, international speaker, and growth coach, Simon Jordan.
Hi, this is Simon Jordan. Welcome back to another episode of One Planet, One Place, the radio show. Well, these shows are all about, you know, inspiring people. You know, I say putting a smile back on the face of the planet. You know, and some of the radio interviews, you know, they're quite hard-hitting. They're difficult subjects to talk about. You know, there could be a bit of sadness in them. But the overall message, maybe the moral of the story, is that we all have incredible strengths within us. We can all give something back. And it's all for the greater good, really. And the person I've got on the show today, a good friend of mine, Mike Buckley, who's a psychotherapist but also practices hypnotherapy and NLP. Now, if you're new to the sort of the world of NLP and possibly not hypnotherapy, you've heard about hypnosis, things like that, stage hypnosis as well. But NLP is neuro-linguistic programming, and it's how we talk to us. It's the communication. So it's neuro-linguistic, so linguistic is language and the programming. So I'll give you an example. So we all give ourselves negative commands. And for instance, years and years ago, I was sleeping really badly. And I used to say, and this is an off-the-cuff remark, which I'm sure you can relate to. I would say, you know, I sleep really badly. God, you know, I never have a great night's sleep. Even though they were off-the-cuff remarks, they were programming my subconscious to enable me to not sleep. You know, it's the old Henry Ford saying, if you think you can, you think you can't, you're probably right. Well, it's so true, how we communicate with ourselves. So it's incredibly powerful, the language we use. I mean, Tony Robbins, Anthony Robbins, says the quality of our life is the quality of our communication. And Mike Buckley, who's going to be on the call in a moment, what he has done in terms of communicating, certainly with himself, the power of what he's done and what he's achieved is incredible. And I'm going to let him tell the story. So, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm very good, my friend. Very good indeed.
Good.
So, tell me. You know, you've got you've studied long and hard. You know, you've got a master's degree in counselling. You know, you're a psychotherapist. You're a hypnotherapist. You're an NLP practitioner. All the rest of it. And you help clients with everything from, you know, giving up smoking to stress to anxiety and this kind of stuff. But what I'm interested about is that's what you do. You practice that, and that's what you help people with, a whole number of issues. But what I'm fascinated with, and I think that the listeners will be fascinated with, you really do, and this is going to be, you're going to understand why it's kind of funny, but you really do walk the walk. Because you had, tell me about how this started. You know, you had this awful accident.
Well, yeah, I had an accident in 2002, and yes, it was an awful accident. It took a long while to recover from that, physically and mentally. The biggest surprise was how much it affected me mentally.
And what was the accident?
It was a motorcycle accident. And it was at quite some speed as well, which didn't help. but at the time, the medical profession were able to put me back together physically. And whenever I talk about this, I'm always quite clear to say I'm grateful for that. And I thank them enormously for that. But one thing I think they're not very good at is the mental and emotional side of things. Over the years, I found that to be the case. But when it came to recovering mentally, recovering emotionally, there simply wasn't that help available. It was very poor. And I guess that's one of the reasons I do what I do as well, because I step into that role myself with people. But then it took a few years for me to come to the decision to have the affected leg amputated because it had been really quite seriously injured.
So tell me, so you had the motorbike accident. This is very it's close to the bone for me because that's another bad pun. But the red list is like, oh, Simon, that's terrible. But I mean, I'm a fellow biker as well, so it just is, you know, it's, yeah, it strikes home that how dangerous these things can be. So, I mean, just a little bit back to the accident. So, you how did you damage your leg? I mean, you obviously came off the bike. What was it about?
Well, it was so broken up. It was virtually smashed rather than broken, and there was a lot of reconstructing done, and the leg was never the same again. To me, it was essentially just a stick on the end of my knee, and a very painful one as well for a long time. So I was never going to be able to walk properly with that, no matter what mindset, you know, I had with it. I simply wasn't going to be able to walk properly with that, and I felt it was dragging me back, holding me down, and that was one of the reasons I decided to do what I did. And I was aware too, and was told it was a risk because it could actually turn out worse. But then I think they've got to say that, and that's what that's the conclusion I arrived at. I'm not going to let that happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it work for me.
So then, so you came to this, obviously it was getting so painful, and it was hampering the rest of your life, I suppose. How did you come to that decision that, right, I'm going to take the leg off, or just come to the stage, right, I cannot deal with this pain anymore?
Well, yeah, it's not wanting to deal with the pain anymore, wanting to get on with my life. My life had come to a standstill, virtually. I felt like I'd retired or something. I was only in my 40s. It really felt like that. I actually felt quite disabled. I began to sort of feel mentally disabled, and that didn't feel very nice at all. But fortunately for me, I could make a decision where that could change, whereas, you know, some people are not able to make such a decision. So I was able to do that. And the sense then that there was something, I could make a change here, it's my decision. Rather than the accident and the consequences of the accident, they were not my decision, although some could say, well, you decided to ride your bike that day. They, you know, the consequences didn't feel like my decision, my choice. I didn't have any power. I was more like a victim, or like a passenger in what was happening. Whereas this time, I could take control. I could drive my own recovery. I could, you know, just feel like I'm the author of my own life again.
So yeah,
That was what was going through my mind.
So the master of your destiny rather than the victim of your circumstances.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you have a lot? I mean, we're going to talk about the amazing feat that you managed to do, but do you ever think? Because I always believe, you know, life is just full of perfect moments, be it good or bad. I mean, I think your story is incredible, and it's, you know, I said you really do walk the walk, because you help people with their mindset and stuff, and you're a shining example of, look, I've done it, so you can too, kind of thing. But it's, do you ever look back and think it was for a reason?
For a reason, as in what I'm doing?
Yeah, you know, you had the accident. Mm. The conclusion of that was the leg was removed.
Yeah.
In terms of that whole process, what did you learn from it? What did you ever think? Okay, right. Because everything is for a reason. I don't believe in accidents.
I go along with you on that because I've always said to anybody whenever I talk about this is that. If a fairy or an angel or some magical person appeared in front of me and transported me back to that moment when the accident happened and said, right, you can have your life back again at this point. You can carry on as you were, or have the accident again. Which would you want? I'll take the accident every time.
Wow.
And I'll take it because of the learning that I got out of it, the growth that I got out of it. I really do think I'm a different person to the person I was then in lots of ways. In lots of ways, I'm the same. But in many ways, I am different, and particularly how I think about things, how I approach things. Going through having to deal with your own, you're on your own. You know, your pain is yours. What you have to deal with every day, and it also for me brought up stuff from my past in you know, Technicolor glory, you could say. So I had to deal with that, and I think that's what in the end strengthened me. And I wasn't really that strong person before the accident. I might have thought I was, because at the time I was training to do what I do now, and I thought I was good at it. I thought I was sorted, you know, and I could help others. But it was only after the accident, having to go through something really quite significant myself, and it bringing up the stuff from my past as well, having to sort that out, having to resolve that in my own mind, has been what has strengthened me, and then gave me the strength to do, you know, what we're going to talk about as well.
Yeah, it's incredible. So you decided, okay, the leg is bad now. You want to take, you know, you want to have it removed. So this is the bit I find amazing. We talk about strength, phenomenal mental strength, and this is why I started off saying, you know, you're a psychotherapist, but you, and about NLP and about communicating with yourself. It's phenomenal. So tell us what was the next stage.
Well, the next stage was then my my surgeon started to sort of hint about amputation, and that kind
how,
of.
How does someone hint about?
Well, yeah, yeah,
just they, Mike, just sort of they, say they, we're going to whip my leg off.
they kind of drop comments about, you know, it's not going very far, and you know, it's not, it isn't working, and that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And then my what would you call it? The orthotist, that's right, who could never do anything for me. I saw her a few times, this lovely Scottish woman, and she just looked at me straight in the eye one day and she said, "Have you ever thought of just cutting it off?" And I scarf it out of there really quickly.
Wow.
It frightened me to begin with. Oh, no, I can't do that. And then after a while, I think it wasn't very long, it was sort of just a few weeks later, it sort of sunk in, and I thought, do you know what, she's right. You know, that's a really good idea. And I went and talked to the surgeon about it, and he just said, I started beating around the bush, and he just said, I think it's a really good idea. When would you like it done?
Wow. So at that point, when... did you, because, you know, you talk about, okay, right, I'm going to have that leg, I'm fed up. But was there a point when you sort of went home and you're staring out the window or something, and then the penny dropped, it's like, oh my word, I'm actually going to have my leg taken off. Something you were born with, it's always been there.
Yeah.
Okay, it's been difficult. I mean, how do you cope with that?
Well, I think you only know how you cope with that when you're in that position. I think there's probably two types of amputee. I think there's the ones who don't have any choice. It's got to come off, whatever the limb is. Or they've already lost it in an accident. It happened already. And the elective amputee, the one who decides this isn't working, I need to do something about it. Right, let's chop it off. And when you make that decision, it's not really that you have to make that decision. You want to make that decision. Your motive is to make something better, and I think that's what does it. You know, that's what cuts through any doubts and any fears. Really, it's still scary, but your motive overpowers that scare. You know, well. It's just got to be done.
So you've then, so the next stage of this, you go, you know, you have the operation. So tell me about this, because this whole thing about, you know, I suppose putting yourself under for the hypnosis, for the hypnosis for the operation. Tell us more about that.
Well, I had come across people who had pioneered using hypnosis for operations. And there's a chap in Spain. I'm not sure if I have this accurate or not, but I haven't got the information with me. I think his name is Dr. Souza. But I remember watching some footage of him. And he had learned how to use hypnosis, and he was a surgeon. And he would put people into hypnosis on the operating table. They were all pre-planned and so on, prepared. And his research seemed to conclude that there was you know, much better recovery. There was less bleeding with whatever operation it was, and patients could go home much earlier as well, because they didn't have the general anaesthetic effects, and also they had a better mind as well. They felt more positive about their operation and you know, the success of the operation. So I was very interested in that, and you know, there seemed to be other people around the world sort of pioneering this as well, researching this as well. And knowing the power of hypnosis for myself, and of course the power of your mind, my mind, I just decided, right, instead of going into a hospital where they're going to take over and they're going to do whatever they want, put me wherever they want, give me whatever they want, that's being a passenger, and that to me is really being a patient. There's something about being a patient. You have to be patient to be a patient, you know. And I'm just not that patient.
Would you say one of your key things is about control, but also freedom?
Yeah, because making the decision, I'm going to take charge of my recovery. I'm going to ask them, or say to them, what I want when I go into hospital. Yes, that gives you a sense of freedom. I'm doing what I want to do.
I bet you're a nightmare patient.
Reason, of course, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to respect them. They are the guys who are going to be doing the surgery and taking care of you, you know. So there's a need for respect for them as well, and respect their experience and their knowledge. I think so many people are in that situation, and I think hand over responsibility or control, and ultimately their safety to the professionals. You know, you take care of me. And sometimes I have seen patients who are very scared because they don't know what's happening. They don't know what's going to happen. You ask them, and I would do this, you know, what are you here for? What you know, what's happening with you? And when's your operation? And what are you having done? They didn't know. And I think that's extraordinary that you don't know what's going to happen. So I wanted to know what's going to happen. I want to know every detail so that I'm part of the process. I'm not just the patient. I'm not just a passenger in the process. I want to know everything. And it's being done to me. It's my body. So I want, as much as I can do, again, within reason, take charge, take control of that. So I negotiated that with my surgeon. You know, he's the surgeon. He's the one wielding the knife. So he has ultimate control. But I want to be in as much control as I possibly can. So I made my requests to him.
Yeah, just as a side note, people, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, the audio sounds a little bit funny, I'm interviewing Mike at the moment. He's over in Ipswich, I'm down on the south coast, and it's via Skype, so sometimes the calls do go a bit funny. There's certainly so much editing we can do, but I wanted to get this interview for you because it's such an important one, just showing the power of the mind. So, Mike, going back to the interview, So you're going into the operation, and how did you put yourself? And so, am I right in thinking you didn't have sort of a general anaesthetic? What was the
right? I didn't have a general anaesthetic, and I asked my surgeon. I wanted to do the hypnosis thing, all of it. But I've got to tell you that at the last minute, I got a bit scared of that. And I realized that what I needed to do, the whole thing, was to have a therapist present with me, doing it for me.
And right.
In this country, they don't allow that because they're considering the possible consequences and then, of course, the possible legal action afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're very reluctant to do something like that. But he knew what I was going to do for myself. So I engaged in self-hypnosis, visualizations that could take me away from the operating table. So what we did was a compromise. And he told me of a rare procedure where some needles are inserted into the leg. And they do something like diverting the nerve impulses, something like that. So we did that, but I was told at the time the back carried risks because if it didn't work, I would very much feel what was going on.
Mm.
So I was prepared to take that risk.
So the hypnosis, your self-hypnosis combined with sort of the acupuncture?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that meant then that I was able to be on that operating table and look my surgeon in the eye, and that's what I wanted to do.
Oh my word!
What are you doing?
I can't even imagine to understand. Well, I had an ingrowing toenail removed once, and I watched them do that, which is it's a million miles away. So I can't, and even then I was like, oh dear, I don't know if I want to watch this. And they separated, they put a sheet up so you could see him, but you couldn't see the leg. But still,
You don't want to.
Man alive!
No, you don't want to see that, and I didn't want to see that, and it wouldn't. Then I'm not doing what I wanted to do, in my mind, if I was going to see that. So as far as I'm concerned at the time, I was off somewhere else. I was off the planet.
So how did you, we haven't got enough time on this interview to do this, but what kind of visual, where were you taking yourself in your head?
It's very simple.
Which I do
at the dentist as well. Is I just sit on a bench, and I've always used this bench. It's in my mind. I sit on this bench, and it's by a little brook. You know what a brook is?
Like a stream. Yeah, a river, yeah.
Yeah, and the water's just bubbling along, and it's catching the sun and the bubbles, and there's lots of bushes and sunlight and shadows, and that's it, really. It's that simple. It's not something complicated. I don't go on a journey, anything like this. I just sit there on that bench contemplating the water, and that's it.
Wonderful. So do you say, in terms of NLP, that has become your trigger and your anchor? You've done it enough times that you've programmed yourself that when you go there, you're separated.
In NLP, NLP talks about how we use our senses to imagine things and to remember things. We're using our senses in the present because we can sense everything around us. We're aware. We're aware through our senses. We can see, we can hear, we can touch, we can smell, we can taste. And when we think, we use those same five physical senses, often without realizing that that's what we're doing. So when we're thinking ahead, often fear, anxiety, stress, and so on are caused by what we're thinking, and it's what we're thinking might happen. And when we're doing that, we're seeing what we think might happen, we're hearing what we think might happen, and so on. We're using our five physical senses. So if we can use those same senses differently, we break that cycle, we break that pattern, we stop that escalation of thinking. We literally distract ourselves, but we're distracting ourselves in a smart way. We know what we're doing.
So you've done it yourself, and then, because having read all about you before this, so you had the operation, you then came round. So they did finally, they persuaded you to take painkillers. So you took, what, a couple of aspirin?
Yeah, the pain team appeared.
The what? The pain what?
The pain team.
Oh, the pain team. You're a real pain,
like
yes.
A squadron of doctors and you know, other professionals. And they gathered around my bed, which was quite worrying. And they were concerned that I wasn't taking any pain medication, pain relief. I'd only taken two paracetamol that morning just to placate the staff nurse. And she was just looking at me and saying, I can't believe you're just taking two paracetamol. And she'd storm off. Like, it completely, shook her whole model of how to take care of parents, a patient. You know? Mm. And so she must have called the pain team. Somebody did. And they wanted me to go on to stronger pain medication, even though I'm sitting there chatting to them quite happily.
So just to try and understand this. So for you to not feel the pain, you're sitting on this bench, you're visualising you're sitting there watching the brook with the trees and the sun glinting off the water. But you almost sort of separating your mind while you're subconscious or you're... I mean, how are you doing that in order to block the pain but be present to talk to people rather than sitting there in a sort of meditative state?
It's just focus. It's possible to be in a... If you focus and practice this, it's possible to be in that meditative kind of state. Whilst you're wide awake and able to move.
But Mike, like me, you're a guy, and we're not supposed to be able to multitask. So. but that is incredible.
It's what you prioritise in your mind as well. You know, you're concentrating on doing what you're doing in your mind.
That's phenomenal.
What you're doing when you're talking and moving about and so on.
Yeah.
And aside to that, you know, it's just something you happen to be doing.
That's incredible. So you took that. You then went on to take a bit more painkiller, which you felt very ill. Tell me about that.
Well, they convinced me that because they said that if I didn't take pain medication now, even though I wasn't in pain, there was a great risk of experiencing chronic pain that they would not be able to stop, and potentially for the rest of my life. So that scared me. I thought, wow, you know, is that true? These guys are the knowledgeable professionals after all. So I took a capsule of morphine, and they left. They were happy. And I immediately vomited, and my body really reacted quite badly to it, or you could say quite well to it. Wanted rid of it. So suddenly I felt very, very ill, and I needed other medication then to counteract what was going on with my body rejecting morphine. It gave me all sorts of problems that particular day, and I was quite embarrassed. And when friends appeared, because they knew what I was doing, when they came to see me and saw me like that, they naturally thought it had gone wrong.
Yeah.
And I was quite embarrassed. I was saying, there's nothing wrong, you know, it's just this. You know, I had to take it. I didn't mean to take it. But, you know, I felt embarrassed that I had given in. But then in the afternoon, by the time afternoon came, I had recovered enough. I still wasn't very well at all. But I thought, I need to get out of here before they give me anything else. So I got in a wheelchair and wheeled myself out of that particular floor, down in the lift, out into the foyer where all the shops were. This is Addenbrookes, which is quite a big hospital. And just camouflaged myself, just hid away, you know. And went back later in the evening. And by evening, I was fine again. I was back on... track with what I was doing, I've managed to get myself together again and straighten my head again, because the effects of that kind of medication really do, well, I find anyway, muddy or make foggy my mind, my head, you know?
Yeah.
And things were spinning as well at the same time. So it's sort of, I spent the afternoon clearing that, you know, just letting myself recover, letting myself relax, letting myself calm down before I returned to the ward. So for that night and the following night, I only really was in the ward to sleep. I didn't want anything to do with them. So then the surgeon I really wanted to see had been away. So as soon as he came back, I asked him if I could go, explain to him why. And he was perfectly fine with it. I think had he been there when the pain team came, I would have called him, and things might have turned out a little differently. But it was a good experience in hindsight, because if I had stuck to my guns and said, no, I'm doing this, I know what I'm doing, I'm not taking medication, I would have been fine. It wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah.
So it was a good lesson, really.
So it's just, I mean, it's phenomenal. So obviously, you know, you fully recovered. Did you, even during the recovery, you still had to keep focus on healing quicker? I mean, what else did you do to facilitate the healing of the leg now missing?
Well, then, sorry. Then, of course, I went home and I'd already prepared my home environment for then the healing process. And I stayed with it for the next few weeks, because, you know, in a matter of just 2 or 3 weeks, this isn't me now, they want to get you walking. So I was back up there by the second week being tried out for a leg. And walking on a temporary leg.
And this is from below the knee now, isn't it? So you've had.
So at that point then, the focus shifts to, how am I going to walk? You know, I need to learn to walk now and walk on a prosthetic leg.
Yeah.
So for the next few months, that's where the focus was, right? It wasn't so much the healing, it was, right, I need to get walking now. I need to learn to walk, and that's quite a journey, because it's one of those things you can do where you see improvements every day, incremental improvements every day, and sometimes a sudden significant improvement. And to me, there's nothing like that for motivating and encouraging. You know, suddenly you're walking 10 meters further than you did the day before. You know, that feels fantastic. No hypnotic techniques needed there.
Oh, amazing. So what, I mean, it's almost, I mean, now you're, I mean, that was then, you are now almost, you know, well, you are an able-bodied person now. And it's incredible, because, you know, we're recording this in 2012. We've just had the Olympics. And I think the world has now seen, you know, the Paralympics and the power of these people who before would have been written off, but they have, you know, not missing one leg like you, they're missing two legs, and they have these blades there, which just looks incredible. I remember watching them on the track, and it's almost like, no, they look superimposed. That looks like computer-generated stuff, and they're running, and you just think, it's incredible how far they've come. So, I mean, working with your clients now, I mean, you know, you obviously do great work. And I think this is the beauty of this. You help people with their mind to overcome things. And it's almost like, well, you say to people, okay, well, how can you help me with my mind? What have you done? You say, well, I actually help. And you talk about your story. It's amazingly powerful. So if there's anyone placed to help people overcome things, you are that person. I mean, it's incredible, your story, listening to that and thinking, wow, to have the power, the mental power, to have the faith as well, and the guts.
But you see, everybody has that ability. Everybody has that capacity too. I'm definitely not someone special or really that unusual. I think I've come across many people because I've been more exposed to it now with, you know, the visits that I make to Edinburgh quite a lot. I talk to everybody that I meet, and I see people who've had some quite significant things happen to them. And you do see those people who have an attitude that gets them through it. And I would say, you know, they have an internal spirit that gets them through it. And I think everybody's got that. For some of us, and me included, it takes a significant event in our lives for that to switch on, if you like, or for us to tune into that. But we all have that capacity. We all have a brain. We all have a mind. We all have the same bodies, more or less. We're human beings. We've all got that capacity. We can do almost anything, I believe, if we put our minds to it. It's all mind. Our minds can do just about anything, I think.
Mm. So how do you help your clients? And just tell me a little bit about the work that you do.
Well, clients come to me for all sorts of reasons, as you said earlier. So, you know, some straightforward things like, you know, a fear of spiders or something like that. But also there are people who come to me because they experience difficulties now that have always been present in their lives and may have originated way back in childhood, something like that. And also people come to me because they might feel they're really quite dissatisfied with their lives, with the way they think life is, I work on inspiring them, helping them to find out who they really are, what they're really like, and what they're really capable of, despite their fears, anxieties, and so on. So, you know, they may want to just fix or put right a simple sort of issue that's kind of bothering them now, you know, like a problem in the workplace or something like this, or they're going flying but they hate flying and they want to sort that out, or they want to do something that's much more in depth where they want to do the work on themselves. They want to find out who they really are. It sounds a bit like a cliche, who you really are, but I don't think many of us, you know, really know who we are. There's so much we can discover about ourselves. There's so much we can discover about our abilities, our qualities. We're not the person we think we are sometimes. I think that can always be revealed. There's much more. And I think no matter how far down that particular road we are, no matter how much we think we know about ourselves, I think there's always more.
Definitely, I totally agree with that. So you help people, and how do you work with people? If you know, if you've got, say, someone's listening to this and they're over in America, but they think, yes, you are the person for me. You know, you're a living testament to, you know, the power of the mind. How do you work with people? Do you do voice, whether you know, phone to phone?
I've done quite a bit of phone to phone work. It can be quite effective. Because it requires quite a lot of focus to do something over the phone. You've got to concentrate, and that's the bit that really works. You've got to concentrate on what you're saying, what you're thinking, and not be distracted. And sometimes that can be more powerful than being in the therapy room, I find.
I suppose also that if they're in the comfort of their own home, they are they're more relaxed, and they can stick you on speakerphone, or even if, you know, I don't know if it's an iPhone. I mean, you've got, you know, because you do it via Skype as well. So, you know, with iPhones now, I know we've had calls via Skype. But you can put your headphones in. So you put your phone down, you dial him in via Skype, so you literally be hands-free and sit in your nice, comfortable chair and talk to you. So, yeah, it's all possible.
Yeah, using the visual part of Skype doesn't really work very well. It becomes quite disjointed and broken up.
Mm.
So audio is the best way to go.
Brilliant. So and I know you've got a great thing on your website, which is Mike Buckley. So Mike, M-I-K-E, and then B-U-C-K-L-E-Y, MikeBuckley.com. .co.uk, yeah. So it's MikeBuckley.co.uk, and the links will be on the website, One Planet, One Place. Go on there and search for Mike Buckley. And you're giving away, it's a relaxation audio, isn't it?
Yeah. That's on there, free to anyone.
Excellent. That's a great audio, actually. I've downloaded and I've used it with my line of work, with everything I'm doing, running the companies and the family and everything else. It's a great audio, so really worth downloading that, guys. Well, Mike, it's been a total pleasure to hear your story. And if you have any comments on this show, or you want to get in touch with Mike, go on to his website, mikebuckley.co.uk. Also, download the free audio as well. It's great. Everyone needs to de-stress. Everyone needs time out, and this Mike's audio is fantastic for that. But leave your comments. You know, if you've been touched by this story, if you're amazed, as I'm sure you will, I was when I first introduced to Mike. You know, it's quite an incredible story. Maybe you know someone who's had the same kind of experience, or maybe you're having trouble at the moment. Leave your comments, and you know, we'll get back in touch with you. And I reply to a lot of them personally, but please do that. But Mike, thank you so much for spending time out of your busy schedule. It's great. As you say, you know, you work internationally, so if there's someone listening to this and you're thinking, yeah, I'd like to get in touch with him, get in touch with him. You know, that's the power of Skype nowadays. We are global. You know, the world is very small. Because, such great technology. So thank you once again. This has been me, Simon Jordan, for another episode of One Planet, One Place, the radio show. Inspiring people, inspiring stories. And I think Mike has certainly lived up to that story today. That is an incredibly inspiring story. So stay tuned. Don't forget you can subscribe on iTunes. You get them automatically. If you subscribe on there, they just, as soon as a new show goes up, it downloads. Also, you've got the TV show as well, where I interview people via camera. Actually, it's a visual version of the radio show. And you've got the Daily Show as well. And don't forget the Backstage Pass. A lot of our guests that come on these shows, they share extra content. And you can get that. You subscribe to there. It's a very low monthly fee. But it's almost like your library, your never-ending library, from these amazing guests around the globe to motivate and inspire you and to give you incredible stories. You'll never need to buy another motivational book again. Never need to go to another motivational seminar or stuff to learn. This is an amazing system for us to give you every week. And it's a very low price. So once again, thanks for listening. Until next time, take care and keep doing what you're doing. Giving back and putting a smile on the face of the planet. Take care. Bye.
You've been listening to One Planet, One Place radio show. To make sure you don't miss a single episode, please subscribe on our website or via iTunes. Simply search for One Planet, One Place. And if you've enjoyed this show, then don't forget to share it and click the like button. Thank you for listening.